Press, and this is my co-presenter, Veronica Bohutch-Clark, and we are going to be presenting. Actually, you're doing the introduction.
Okay. So we are talking about the lower right and the complex adaptive systems and how difficult it is for the traditional scientific reductionist perspective to deal with that loosey-goosey lower right. And what we're going to use for this is an example of actually Faye's PhD thesis, and you'll probably think I'm a terrible supervisor because I let her carry on with with one approach when I had integral in my back pocket. However, the picture that you see here was actually the case study, if you like, that Faye was working with. This is the city of Calgary, and we had a huge flood a few years ago, and it just went right through the downtown core, and it was like 2 weeks before the Calgary Stampede, which is the biggest show on earth, right? And everybody comes there, all the cowboys from all over the world go there, and here we were in the middle of water, and the city somehow managed within 2 weeks to clean it up and actually have the stampede. So obviously that was a ripe, we can go to the next one. So that was a ripe kind of a situation for Faye to study because, I mean, after all this adaptation you'll hear about that the city did in those 2 weeks, right? You would think, obviously, there would be some organizational learning. Well, the devil is in the lower right. So this is how we're going to run the presentation. Faye will tell you about her original research approach, which is design-based research, DBR, very scientific. The upper right mentality cuts things up to study the system, right? And so in this, DBR is kind of like experimental research design, an adaptation of that. So Faye will tell you about the context of the research turned out to be several projects. By the time she was finished her PhD, she'll talk about the design-based research itself, and then we'll talk about what went wrong. And an integral analysis of that and so what. And we'll use the integral model. This would be kind of a map of integral methodological pluralism. We'll talk about that in a sec. And design-based research is this, but it really kind of comes from this tradition. And that's where the problems come in. All right, you're on.
Okay, so my professional background, I'm going to say was, because I'm moving quickly in different directions. I was a systems-based environmental management consultant and auditor. And having worked with management systems for a long time, I started realizing some of the limitations of the systems theory. If they're systems theorists, forgive me for this, but I thought that complex adaptive systems would be a good elevated level to stop looking at the predict and control model of environmental management and try and look more at the development of relationships between an organization and its environment as a more holistic way of dealing with the environment. And I was very optimistic when I started, and I still have to say I still love the theory, complex adaptive systems theory, and I still think it has a lot of great applications, and I'll continue to work with it. But I did run into some limitations with it. And the first limitation was in my selection of my research methodology, and I didn't realize this at the time. But I thought, well, I'm going to define adaptation as organizational learning so that I had some way to relate to the organizations I was working with. Look at organizational learning as adaptation, model an organization as a complex adaptive system, and then look at how that system responded in some sort of a disruptive event and how the changes that occurred were structurally incorporated into the organization through changes in policy or process or organizational hierarchies or this sort of thing. I was very excited about it. I came out, I did my design-based approach where you start out by making your intervention design and you go through with a couple of iterations in process in the organization and kind of adjust, and by the end you should have the perfect model. That was the idea. Then I went into a very chaotic environment just before I started, this happened, and I had made arrangements with the City of Calgary to work in the Department of Environmental Management for 20 months, so I fully integrated myself into the organization, and because of the flood at the last moment, ooh, that's kind of fuzzy. At the last moment, I sort of switched my original design a little bit, so I thought I was being really flexible to accommodate the flood. And the idea was to look at how different parts of the city were working together to respond to the flood, and how those changes that they had were fed forward into the organization. And I was in particular interested in these structural changes. So what happened during the flood was really interesting, and I think it was a defining moment for the city because people came together. The stampede was at stake, you know, like that's what we live for, is this silly stampede, which is a bunch of cows and cowboys. But we're very proud of it, and you should have seen the response. Like the whole city came out to respond to this flood and get everything. It's like, we got to get this fixed. Every thousands of volunteers. They actually had trouble coping with all the volunteers because they were like all in the streets trying to clean up, and there was like crap everywhere, mud and debris, and the waste and recycling people are trying to remove the waste, but of course none of their equipment was adequate for doing that. So they had roads people coming in doing waste and recycling work. They actually redesigned the landfill temporarily to accommodate the waste. They had people coming in, both volunteers and other professional organizations, and roads went in, and they were like rescuing the lions out of the zoo and with their heavy equipment carting animals around and all. It was super exciting, and I went in.
The lions were housed in the jail.
Anyway, it was, I thought, okay, now there's some learning. All the boundaries dropped down, and there was cooperation, unprecedented cooperation, with no consideration of budget, if you can believe it. It's like, don't worry about it, just, you know, use our equipment, we'll take care of it later. And I was expecting in these conversations that, you know, I'm interviewing them, it's like, so then what happened? And what's left of that? How, you know, how did that change afterwards? And everybody's like, it went back to the same thing completely. And I couldn't find any examples of this feed-forward adaptation. What was happening was the system had buffered itself from the change. It responded really, really well. But then it just snapped back to the old way. And I was sitting there as a researcher with my beautiful design-based research iterations thinking, I can't do this because it's not sincere anymore. This is not what the organization is doing. And I, you know, parts of me were like, I really believed in the theory well enough, and I think that systems do adapt, that I really, like, I thought I was going to see it, and I was sad that I didn't see it, and I really didn't understand why it wasn't happening, but I did accept that it wasn't. Somebody was watching the whole time saying, I know why that's not happening. But what I did is I kind of regrouped. And I took these different iterations, and I started changing really quite radically what the study was about. I was still using the design research methodology, but the whole structure of the study kind of changed. And I, to try to make it a little bit easier, I picked a situation where there was a natural change already going that was a structural change in the organization. They were starting to develop some strategic environmental management programs that were supposed to be going across the boundaries of the different departments in the city. And I thought, okay, well, That's actually happening. So I'm going to, and I had the departmental support to develop a complexity-based approach to doing strategic management across the different departments. And I thought, again, it's like, this is going to be great. And I developed my model, and it was a really lovely model. And the people I was working with, it was great. And the people I was working with were like, yes, yes, this is great. But I was in the environmental management programs group, and I was talking strategy. And over here was the environmental strategy manager, and she said, no. She just flatly said, no. And, you know, you can probably guess why. And Veronica certainly did know why. And she's watching the whole time. It's like, you just walked into all these problems with your reductionistic complexity science view. So I'm just going to hand it over to Veronica, and she'll give you a little bit of analysis of an integral theory perspective on why something like complex adaptive systems theory, which should be a holistic view, kind of contained me in a way that was not helpful in my research method.
Okay, so maybe if you can flip the to the next one. Okay, so basically the design-based research was just looking at, how the organization coped with the outside environment and so on. And this was kind of the social autopoiesis. But there are all these other quadrants, right, at still operating as well. So DBR was one way to somehow try to, well, again, in a scientific way, to contain the problem, right? The problem with complex systems is just that they're fluid. They always move. But as a researcher and you're trying to find some solution, you take a slice of time and you have to kind of stick the shovel somewhere and start from there, right? So as soon as you start cutting up the problem in whatever way, you're going to destroy the complexity, right, which runs the system. So that's one problem. The other, of course, is that by concentrating just on this quadrant, which is already problematic and we as researchers are always trying to describe some concrete way. You know, there's got to be a research design that's going to capture it, and it's just, this is elusive. It's a moving living system, so it doesn't quite lend itself, whether it's an organization adapting or not, or whether you're looking at more global systems, information systems, and so on. They're really not predictable and they're not controllable. They're sort of beyond, right, once they get to a certain size, certainly. So what was happening in this situation was that there was also a lot of individual behavior. However, that individual behavior was also parts of different teams within the organization. But this, of course, is a different world from this. And so the design-based research or the whole focus on trying to control complexity and analyze it certainly didn't even consider this. This would be like, you know, small change. However, as we found, in fact, in the first iteration, the first the flood example, the first time that Faye had introduced a organizational learning model, the problem was in the cultural corner. Where again the unit, the organization as a whole, once the crisis was over, they went back to how things were, and that's how they wanted it. So, and maybe part of it was, you know, after all the chaos, they wanted the safety or whatever, but it was a no, right? We're not changing anything. This works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? In the other example, we were looking actually at zone one, although, you know, zone two would be interesting too because of the language that she would use, the communications that this boss would use to kind of signal her decisions. That would be also interesting to look at. But essentially, there were whatever personal reasons why she felt that this model was not going to be accepted in her sub part of the organization. So, but those things wouldn't show up here. It was a surprise when it did show up. If you did the four quadrant kind of an investigation, it would show up. But if you're only looking here, you know, the other part just didn't exist. So we were talking about a new framework, which really is using IMP, Integral Methodological Pluralism, to look at all four quadrants of a problem. And that also brings us to the word transdisciplinary, right? Somehow, the knowledge from all quadrants has to talk to each other, right? And the recognition of the influences on the decisions that are made, that has to be acknowledged and looked for. It's 3 minutes? Okay. So the only thing I'd say about the IMP from an academic perspective is that it's trustworthy in the sense that it's coherent and logically links. The quadrants are your ontologies or worldviews. Epistemologies are the approaches. And methodologies will give you the methods. So everything is logically connected so that for every quadrant, you're actually using the appropriate methodologies and questions. That also sort of guards against your own personal bias. If you like one quadrant more than the others, and you may give it more. This way, you know, if you don't have questions in a particular quadrant, you're being biased, right? So there is a built-in kind of a trustworthiness. And there's a recognition that everything happens at once. We co-arise, right? Tetra-arise. So I don't know do you want to say a few comments about your questions? Okay. About your questions about how do you look at everything at once? Did you? Yeah. We had lots of discussions about this.
Yeah, of course, looking at everything at once is the trick, right? And that's why I was trying to apply complexity theory. I thought complexity theory would give you everything at once. But complexity theory gives you all of the collective external systems-based stuff at once, but it doesn't give you access into the other quadrants. And I don't want this to come out as a straw man sort of thing, saying complexity theory didn't work because it's stupid and limited. And I actually think if I were to do the study again, I still would use complexity theory, but I wouldn't use a design approach. I would use an integral approach to managing the research process, because what it would do is open you up to understanding the deeper complexities of the internal and the individual aspects that would give maybe more realistic expectations, and also really disrupt the idea that you can come into an organization and think that you're going to see what's going on, which I was kind of a little skeptical about that in the first place, because I don't think you should be designing before you involve your participants in design research. But you know how the academic process goes, is you got to go through candidacy and you have to submit your proposal and your ethics reviews and all of this sort of thing. But I think, you know, it's not even just complexity theory. I think a lot of these views that we have, that we think we're looking at something holistically, there's a lot of different holistic type models. And I think that taking a step back and putting that, trying to find the address sort of where your so-called holistic model sits in the integral model is very useful to trying to open up and make sure that you're not designing in problems for yourself right from the beginning. Oh, you're still going?
I'm still going. I just wanted to explain what this is. So Faye's question was, so if everything arises at once, how the hell do you keep track of it and how do you, you know, find your way through it? And you can by, in fact, and sometimes this is a misconception, you do have to give focus to each one of the quadrants, which means you're using different questions and different methodologies for the problem. And you're going to come up with some themes, and sometimes you may start, well, you have to start somewhere, right? You have to dig the shovel in somewhere. So let's say you start in the upper right and you give questionnaires and find out sort of a big picture of how your organization is feeling about things. And maybe you had some questions that you had prepared for managers and the people at the bottom who get all the shit and all that, right? And you might have had a whole bunch of questions ready, but when you looked at the results from the questionnaire, you may realize, actually, my questions are way off the mark. These people are about something else. So you need to change your questions and respond to what's actually happening. And maybe as you do, let's say, phenomenological interviews in the upper left, you may find some other stuff, like deep information about the actual culture and what's the intents of these different people at the different levels, etc. So then, when you go to talk to the groups, or you observe what's happening in a particular part of the organization, you may again be informed by different questions, right? And so it goes. So this is simply a picture of how you can then look at the themes co-arising and identify gaps or contradictions. And those, of course, are the places where you want to look at what's going on in the organization. So I think that would be the end for us. And I probably used up every single question.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. So if there are questions, here's one suggestion, because we are running short on time. Yeah, and what could be interesting is people who have questions, we surface the questions, but we don't answer it now. So we surface the questions so people in the room can hear what this brought up for you, and the presenters can also know any feedback that might have. And then I would say, if you're interested in the answer, come talk to the presenters afterwards. So do you have, anybody have any questions coming out of this? Okay, we have two, and then we will...
So I was curious in what you were just talking about, whether what you're suggesting is in the research to have cycles of questionnaires, in a sense. Once you get the results and map it out, see a part is missing, you create new questionnaires and submit those. And also whether in the example with the city, the idea of them snapping back to their standard form so quickly was perhaps a component of... the fact that it worked so well, actually. So the idea that they did not need to change, because even without planning for that, they were successful.
Then we'll take another question.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I'm wondering what examples you provide for inquiry or questions between the different quadrants to understand influences between the four, to see in more linear time what could emerge. And then I'm also wondering if you were to go back, I don't know if you are in contact with some of the people you were interviewing, if in fact there are some shifts that would reveal that there is more an integral perspective that has been taken.
Wonderful. Those are really juicy questions. So we're going to wrap this up, and we'll give some time for the third presenter.